From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. It is Thursday, October 8th, 2015, and we have a fantastic show in store for you all. In just a moment, we'll be chatting about an interesting investigation that is taking place surrounded around the Louisville men's basketball team. Juicy stuff, folks. You don't want to miss that. Also, we will continue our discussion that we ended yesterday's show with concerning the fantasy sports entities and websites of DraftKings and FanDuel. And the spotlight has been placed on both of these websites amid a bit of an iffy situation with one of DraftKings and their employees, I should say. Also, it is Thursday, and each and every Thursday, we give you guys a sneak peek look into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down. And this week, I got the chance to sit down with a member of the 1965 Michigan State Football National Championship team who has written three books, and his latest book is a touching one. And a very troubling story about his brother, who was diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Folks, I am talking about Jim Probstel. You don't want to miss that. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you. Recap the Cubs typing the Pirates last night. All of that and so much more. If you want to call in, you know the number, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this Thursday, October 8th. The University of Michigan and Derek Jeter's The Players Tribune announced that the second installment of the All Access series, Our Michigan, will debut very soon. TPT will journey through Michigan's historic 150th season of varsity athletics to offer an exclusive inside look at three storied Michigan teams, that being Michigan football, softball, and men's basketball. The school announced that in a news release. Now, the U of M package will debut on the Players Tribune this month, and subsequent content will roll out throughout the team's seasons. That should be an interesting look into those squads. All right, Logan Tully Tillman, an offensive lineman dismissed from the Michigan football team a month ago, appeared in an Ann Arbor courtroom facing three felony charges. The charges are two counts of capturing and distributing an image of an unclothed person and one count of using computers to commit a crime, according to online records for the 15th District Court. Tully Tillman is accused of filming a portion of a sexual encounter with a woman without her knowledge and then transmitting it to his personal device without her permission. That's according to Ann Arbor police. Jake Arrieta weaved his routine spell, and rookie Kyle Schwarber drove in the first three runs, too, on a majestic 450-foot homer out of PNC Park. And Chicago blanked Pittsburgh 4-0 in Wednesday night's National League wildcard game to advance to face the St. Louis Cardinals in the NL Division Series, which begins Friday at 6:30 p.m. on TBS, by ending a nine-game postseason losing streak that dated back to Game 4 of the 03 NL Championship Series. Chicago advanced to the NL Division Series that begins in St. Louis on Friday. The Cubs' John Lester will face the Cars' John Lackey in Game 1 in first postseason meeting of the two longtime NL rivals. All right, FIFA's Ethics Committee has provisionally banned Sepp Blatter and Michael Platini and Jerome Vlack for 90 days in the wake of a Swiss criminal investigation. FIFA presidential candidate Chung Mong-jun has also been handed a six-year ban. It had been widely reported on Wednesday that FIFA President Blatter was set to face the sanction, while news of UEFA President Platini's impending suspension was also leaked to the media. NCAA investigators interviewed Ohio State freshman Jaquan Lyle on Tuesday about his recruitment by Louisville. An Ohio State spokesman confirmed that to Yahoo Sports. Dan Wallenberg, Ohio State Associate Athletic Director for Communications, said the NCAA spoke with Lyle in regards to allegations made in a new book about potential rules violations within the Louisville basketball program. The book, entitled Breaking Cardinal Rules, Basketball and the Escort Queen, end quote, was published last week. Co-author Katina Powell alleges that a Louisville staffer paid her to provide escorts to dance for and have sexual encounters with players and recruits. Wow. New York Knicks coach Derek Fisher and Memphis Grizzlies forward Matt Barnes were involved in a physical altercation Saturday night in Los Angeles during a party at the home of Barnes' ex-wife. Sources confirmed that to ESPN.com on Wednesday. Now, when Barnes arrived at the home, he got physical with Fisher. But Fisher did not show any outward physical injuries when he returned to practice on Tuesday. Fisher told Knicks officials he had enjoyed spending time with his children over the weekend, sources said. Bryant assistant coach Chris Burns came out as openly gay Thursday in a first-person account on OutSports, becoming the first openly gay coach in Division I men's basketball. USA Today also published a feature on Burns, which gives an inside look at his decision to come out. Burns played for Bryant from 03 to 07 and is entering his third year as an assistant coach with the team. And TNT sideline reporter Craig Sager, who has been battling leukemia, was medically cleared on Wednesday and released from the hospital, quote, for good, according to his son. That's fantastic news. Great to see Craig Sager back and well. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything, you know that number. Just dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. It's about that time to start the show. What's up, beautiful people? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I'm excited. I am so excited. First off, it's Thursday. I tell you what, I can't believe it's already Thursday. The days just fly by anytime you're having fun, folks, and we have been having a fantastic time throughout the week here on the show. But I tell you what, I got the chance yesterday to sit down with a man who has one incredible story. And I, you guys know, each and every Wednesday night at Current Sports TV, we record Current Sports TV at 6 p.m. And my guest actually was in town last weekend here in East Lansing for MSU's homecoming, right? He was in town because the 1965 Michigan State National Championship football team was being honored. And he is a part of that team. Folks, I'm talking about Jim Probstel. Jim is a fantastic guy. I mean, they actually honored that championship team at halftime of the Michigan State and Purdue game. They all came out on the field, saluted the crowd. It was just a fantastic moment. There's even pictures of Coach D'Antonio, along with the current team, walking to the stadium with members of the 1965 National Championship team. Unbelievable stuff, right? We all know, and whenever we talk about Michigan State football, we all know about that 1965 squad and what they meant to athletics here at Michigan State. So they were honored, and Jim was in town, you know, powwowing with a lot of his former teammates and reliving, you know, the glory days, I guess you can say, while also chatting it up with the current players and getting to know Coach D'Antonio and so on and so forth. But get this, Jim actually lives in Chicago, Illinois. And he's so gracious, and he wanted to be a part of our airwaves so bad that he said, you know what, Al? I know you guys only record on Wednesday. I will drive up. Even though I'm in town right now, I will drive back up here on Wednesday to do your show because I want to be a part of it. And, you know, just the nicest guy. So even before I got downstairs, I usually arrive like, you know, 5 or 10 minutes before we hit the air at 6 p.m., Jim, you know, he gave himself a lot of time coming from Chicago to here in East Lansing, and he arrived about, I want to say about 30 minutes early, right? I've never seen a guest of mine do this before, but he's early, right? And I go down, and I hear all of this chuckling, and I hear everybody just laughing and having a good old time. I thought it was a party in the Current Sports TV studios, right? So I walk in, and there's Jim just cracking jokes, getting to know the staff, the camera people, the production assistants, our producer Tim Elkins. I mean, there was Jim just chatting it up and was really just the man of the night, chatting it up and getting to know my staff. Just a blue-collar guy. And I walk right in, and he gives me the biggest smile. I shake his hand, and, you know, and we went from there. But I just want to shout out Jim because that was one of my favorite moments since I've been doing Current Sports TV and since I've been doing this show a little over, 2 years now. Because Jim, I mean, his personality is just one of a kind. Just a one-of-a-kind guy. And again, folks, it's Thursday. It is Thursday. You guys know what happens right here on Current Sports Radio. I will give you a preview of my sit-down with Jim Probstel today around 1:30. You do not want to miss it, folks. I kid you not. It is must-see TV tonight at 10:30 on WKAR-TV. But again, for those that can't stay up, for those that may be past your bedtime, who knows? You may go to sleep at 8:30 before 10:30. We'll give you a preview of that interview because it was a great one. Again, Jim has written 3 books. His latest recounting the life of his brother, Dick Probstel, who was diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Of course, that is a disease that a lot of football players have been diagnosed with in recent time due to their playing days, due to constant knocking of the brain while playing the game of football. It's a disease that gradually shrinks the brain. And his brother Dick was diagnosed through it and really battled and had a challenging time, especially in the later years of his life. So Jim decided to tell his brother's story, which is heartwarming stuff, folks. And I talked to him, and he told me how difficult that was to go back and relive those tough moments, but also tell about the good ones as well. So you don't want to miss that. Again, that's around the 1:30 mark. We will give you a preview of that interview, folks. You don't want to miss it. And our phone lines are open. I want to hear from you. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Folks, did you catch last night's Cubs and Pirates game? Jake Arrieta. Oh, my goodness. Is he good or what? I mean, can we just hand him the Cy Young right now? Just unbelievable stuff. Again, a 4-0 shutout over the Pittsburgh Pirates in Wednesday night's National League wild card game to advance. They now play the St. Louis Cardinals in the NL Division Series, which will begin on Friday evening at 6:30 p.m., and, you know, it ends a 9-game postseason losing streak for the Cubs. I know a lot of good buddies of mine that live in the Chicago area, and they tell me, man, that they were, even though the game was on the road, they were absolutely just celebrating just to win a postseason game the first time since 2003, game 4 of the 2003 NL Championship Series. Wow, that's fun stuff, man. So, watching, you know, Jake Arrieta pitch is just wonderful. And you know, we've seen the things that he's done this season. He's had a perfect game this year. He's a stud. He's a stud in the game. And I tell you what, I'm a big fan. This is when I really start to hone in on baseball, because this is when it's at its best. This is when it's so entertaining. Because you guys know, I've voiced my opinion about this multiple times. I just think there are way too many games in a Major League Baseball season. They should be condensed. It starts to become numb after a while, especially like midway through a baseball season where you're just constantly, you're just playing games to play them. Playing games to play them, folks. And, you know, it really doesn't start to get interesting until the later of the year when guys and you know, when teams, I should say, are competing to try and make the wild card or to try and win their respective division so that they can book a ticket to the playoffs. That's when it becomes interesting. But, there were a lot of people that were against wild card games when baseball first introduced this because they thought it tarnished the tradition and the history of the game. How many times have we heard that before when it comes to MLB, right? But I love them. MLB wild card games are the best because They are one game eliminations. Both teams throwing out their best product. Both teams throwing out their best pitcher. Desperation is on the line. You watch the game and you can feel the intensity in the respective stadium, win or lose. Emotions are high. I don't know if you guys watched the game last night, but there was a brawl that ensued during the game that, you know, the Pittsburgh felt as though Jake Arrieta was targeting some of the Pittsburgh batters. And actually, one of the pitchers, took a shot at Jake while he was at bat. And then stuff hit the fan. Both benches cleared. It took a while for things to settle down. But, man, I just love the intensity of a wild card game. So it's been a fun 2 days for me, sitting back and watching the Cubs and Pirates last night. Just a fantastic game, even though it was a shutout, a 4-0 shutout. But I just love watching Jake Arrieta pitch. So now as we move on now, it's going to get very, very interesting because now, the Division League Series game starts. The NLDS, the ALDS, you got, Kansas City. They'll be taking on Houston. You got Toronto and Texas. You got the Mets in L.A. You got now the Cardinals versus the Cubs. It is going to be so fun. So fun. It's kind of hard for me to choose, man, who I think is going to pull out this thing. I mean, if you look at, the American League right now, it's really tough to go against Toronto, in my opinion. I think Toronto is playing such good baseball. They're unbelievable right now. So if I had to choose who was going to come out the AL, I'm going to go with Toronto. Looking at the NL, I mean, Mets, you got the Dodgers, you got the Cardinals, and now you got the Cubs. Man, that's a tough one. I may go with maybe the Mets here. I don't know. Whoever comes out, though, is going to be a very entertaining World Series because I think these are all talented teams, some hotter than others. That's just the ebb and flow of baseball. But, man, this is when baseball is at its best, folks. I love it. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKR's Current Sports, my man, 50 grand, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
I'm doing well, Al. Yeah, that game last night, boy, there was some superstition in East Lansing last night, wasn't there? I was watching the game with one of my friends who, he's originally from Portland, but has always been a Cubs and a Tigers fan, so mainly Tigers, but I guess with the Tigers not in the playoffs, Detroit natives kind of have that mentality of needing another team to vote for come playoff time. Not so much for the Tigers, but I guess right. They can still adapt that from the Lions history. But even so, he was watching it, decked out everything red and blue. Everything red and blue. He would knock on wood probably 5 times a minute whenever you'd say something like, wow, the Cubs are looking good here. Knock on wood. Everything
right.
like that. So you can see how much this means to the Cubbies and their fans. I'm not sure if this is their year, but certainly such a step in the right direction. And they've got such a young, promising team as well. Even if this isn't, the future looks bright. And now they're managed by Joe Maddon, who's done a great job. He was unbelievable when he was in Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they've really just come such a long way as a franchise, and I hope they can do something this year. I would love to see a historically impossible matchup just about of like the Cubs and the Blue Jays or the Royals and the Blue Jays. That's a serious possibility this year, and that would be sure something to see those fan bases both get to see the World Series.
Yeah, without a doubt, and I just can't. Because to me, I think the biggest takeaway was just the performance from Jake Arrieta, because I just think he's just so good. He's so good. He struck out 11 in that four-hit masterpiece. And the thing about, wild card games is whoever plays in that wild card game, whoever advances to that next round to compete in the ALDS and the NLDS, when you look at it, they are at a disadvantage now because they put out everything. They put out their best pitcher. They put out their best product. So you go in there having to start that series with a diluted product, but certainly not a product that you could have started with if you were just one of those division leaders at the end of the day. But at that same token, just to move on is just got to be a sigh of relief. And I'm curious about the Chicago fan base. I mean, the Cubs fan base, at least, because, again, this is the first time in a long time that they have not, advanced in the playoffs. Again, a losing streak, a 9-game postseason losing streak that dates back to Game 4 of the 2003 NL Championship Series. So I'm wondering, you know, if they do lose in the next round to St. Louis, is it a disappointing year? That's the big question I always wonder when it comes to teams who have not made the postseason in a while, may have won, you know, that first series even, not even a wild card, but just they advance and then bid adieu. Are you satisfied with that? I've always wondered that. But you know what? Moving on now, Isaac. Got to bring up two stories before we give our good folks, our good listeners, the preview of tonight's Current Sports Television episode. But I found these stories just to be, one, disturbing. One of these are disturbing. I'm going to get to that one first. And the other, a bit comical. Now, the one that I'm talking about that's disturbing, I don't know if you guys saw this news break, but it actually broke last week. Last week is when, you know, this story hit the fan. Now, there's a veteran journalist who co-authored a book filled with explosive allegations against the University of Louisville men's basketball program. Dick Cady, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist based in Indianapolis, insisted that Katina Powell, a Louisville prostitute who claims that a former Louisville staff member paid thousands of dollars and gave game tickets to her and other escorts, including her own daughters, to provide sexual services to players and recruits. Wow. Now, Katie was a part of a team of the Indianapolis Star reporters who won the 1975 Pulitzer Prize for local investigative specialized reporting. And he says that Katina Powell and her claims are pretty, pretty valid. Now, with that being said, Rick Pitino actually had a press conference last week in which he denied that he knew of anything of that nature going on within the wheelhouse of the Louisville basketball program. And, you know, when this book comes out, again, the book, you know, if you missed our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, the book is entitled Breaking Cardinal Rules, Basketball and the Escort Queen. It was actually published last week. And, you know, it's got some interesting and juicy details in it. And now, NCAA, investigators are, you know, getting involved. And they actually interviewed Ohio State freshman Laquan Lyle about his recruitment by Louisville. And, you know, I won't bore you the details concerning the, you know, what was exactly was said throughout the course of 22 text messages. But folks, let me say, it's ugly. It's really, really ugly. I mean, it details how, Katina details how, you know, her, along with a few of the escorts, you know, how they met this individual, how they met Laquan Lyle and what went down. And, oh my goodness, this was Powell's journal entry relating to a show allegedly done for Lyle. Just listen to this really briefly here. Quote, "Been a long time since we've been up to U of L to do a show. McGee texts me like, what's up? He wanted me to bring three girls up there for a new recruit named Jaquan Lyle. He and his friend. I took escorts," these are the escorts' name, "Rodney, Too Tall, Jasmine, and Shay, who calls herself Sammy. Too Tall made $100. Shay made $100, and Jazzy made nothing because she did absolutely nothing." Wow. Isaac, when I heard about this story, my man, I had to just kind of step back a little bit and say, is this real, or is this, you know, an excerpt from the movie He Got Game with Ray Allen? Because this is just glaring. Now, I understand the recruitment trail is one that can be very, very fishy at times. We've seen in the past scandals occur with potential athletes visiting programs, and during that visit, some shiesty stuff going down. Some stuff that shouldn't be going down, going down. But this is opening up an entirely new can of worms. Prostitutes and escorts? Wow. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays off. And if it's true, Rick Pitino does not need to be the head coach anywhere, let alone at the University of Louisville. Shocking stuff, my man.
Yeah, this is without a doubt worse than anything I've seen. If this is true.
Right.
First off, have to emphasize that. But if this is true, this is worse than the USC Reggie Bush scandal. This is worse than why SMU lost all those scholarships and got all those sanctions. This is worse than the Ohio State tattoos. All combined, this is would by far, in my opinion, be worse than any academic signs of cheating from a university to help their athletes or any of that, because this really crosses the line into a whole totally different realm of exposing college athletes, not just to money, not just, you know, rejecting kind of the NCAA system, of which some of the rules I think are arbitrary in the first place, but this goes into violating U.S. law, violating the really ages of some of these players, some of these recruits. They're not even 18 when they're being recruited.
Right.
So this is by far the most shocking allegation I've heard against a university's recruiting trail. I hope it's not true. I really do. I've always liked you, Louisville as a program. Rick Pitino's had his problems in the past, but I think he's done a good job of turning it around and putting out quality players and pretty good guys in terms of Russ Smith and Peyton Siva, players like that. However, this would be quite a blow to the program and the NCAA's prestige for trying to uphold this moral standard where players are developed into men. That's part of the reasoning why players can't come out until after freshman year. The NCAA supposedly wants to get them an education. This would be, that's a moral, you know, sort of proposition from the NCAA in their words. But this right. would violate all of that, and this would really be a horrifying story, if true, for Louisville and college sports.
On Monday, June 10th, 2013, Katina Powell allegedly texts McGee saying, quote, "Hey, Andre, what's the name of the recruit the tall chick was with on Saturday?" McGee allegedly responded, "Jaquan Lyles. Some other dudes is looking for the tall chick." The book says that was a part of a 22-text message exchange between Powell and McGee pertaining to Lyles' visit. So, yeah, folks, again, I have to agree with you, Isaac. And again, who they – and I'm getting some tweets here from people asking about who is McGee. Andre McGee is the Louisville Director of Basketball of Operations. So that's who McGee is, that's referring to in those messages. But, again, if this is found true, this is going to be a huge blow to, Rick Pitino, his legacy, the Louisville basketball program. And I think it already is, to be honest. I mean, I if I'm a parent sitting back and I'm reading this story and Rick Pitino, and if I have a son who's a great basketball player, one of the top recruits in the nation, and Rick Pitino is interested in recruiting my son, and I'm reading this stuff, you better believe I am not having my son even go to Louisville for a visit, let alone even entertain the thought. This is going to hurt Rick Pitino very badly when it comes to the recruiting trail, because you better believe that parents are watching this. Reputation is everything. And just imagine, this is another thought that came to mind. Jaquan Lyles, just imagine what kind of an impact this is going to make when it comes to his overall basketball career at Ohio State. Having this hoopla surrounded around this freshman, oh my goodness. I would not want to be in his shoes as a young kid at Ohio State. It's just sticky. This whole thing is just sticky, man. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9200. 9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got JC from Lansing. JC, how you doing? And welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? I love your show, man.
Oh, thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I listened to Adams, and then I went to Earl, and now I'm with you.
So. Oh, man. The tradition continues, right?
Yeah, the three amigos. Yeah.
There we go.
Hey,
thanks, JC.
You know, that Louisville thing, I'm telling you, you guys are talking about how shocked, and I'm telling you what, man, that stuff's been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, and I have talked to a few recruits here and there, and then they had lady escorts. They were actually students, you know, really hot students that would show them around the campus. Now, not sex or stuff like that, but you know what I mean?
Right, right. Like they
so
were just
not
to,
really a shock.
Just to catch their eye.
I think it's more shocked that they got caught.
Right.
Because I think that's the tip of the iceberg with a lot of schools. I mean, a lot of schools.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's one of those things that you hear about, JC, and because I've heard that as well. You know, when kids are visiting a respective campus, you know, they reach out and like you just said to you know, have a few attractive girls, show them around campus, and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And I believe it. Yeah, let's not be naive here. It does go on, and it's one of those things that, hey, it goes on. And If we're not caught, we're not caught. Everything is good. But when you are caught, oh, there's nothing else you can do. You know?
There you go.
That's how it goes, man.
Yeah. And as far as football, you know, they're, like I said, they're 5-0. Everybody's kind of leery. And, you know, I guess I have to fall into that category because I haven't really – I thought the offensive, defensive line were top 5 or top 10 in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
They said they were the best. And the offensive line has not really shown it. The defensive line, kind of, but not what we expected, I think. I mean, I know D'Antonio don't run scores up like other schools, you know, like TCU, Baylor, like, hey, let's pile it on, let's get 70, 80 points, you know, for style points. And I understand that. But I don't know. And I know we have a lot of injuries. I know that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But When we were healthy, I did not see that dominance yet.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Where we just dominate, our offensive defense lines dominate. And that's kind of concerning to me. And I don't want the Spartans to lose a game the rest of the year. You know, but I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. There's just something that's bugging me about this team. And when they get up against Michigan, Nebraska and Ohio State, those things are going to come back to haunt them, those little things, I think. I don't know, those little mistakes here and there. And I didn't know they're kids, and they coach them up, but God dang it. You know, I know we're winning, and we're 5-0, like Daniel Antonio says. A win's a win.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to frustrate the team and the coaches somewhat, don't you think?
Certainly. JC, you and I are on the same page because at the end of the day, again, it's great that Michigan State is 5-0. It's great that they are undefeated. That's the end goal, to win the game, point blank, period. But also, there's another component to it. It's how you win as well, especially because we all know with this whole college football playoff that isn't active in its second year now, we all know what the committee is looking for. If you squeak out victories, you know, barely squeak out victories against teams that you are highly favored against and that you should be spanking and you don't spank them, it looks bad. And it's got to be frustrating because Michigan State had a 21-0 lead at halftime, JC. They let them creep back in, and they had to rely on a Michael Geiger 30-yarder in order to pull out that game. That's got, like you said, it's got to be frustrating. And D'Antonio, again, D'Antonio's not stupid. He knows that his team has some wrinkles to iron out, and they better do it soon because the big dogs are coming down the road.
Yep, and I haven't seen any progress where it looks like they're coming out of it. Maybe this weekend against Rutgers because they're pretty bad.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, they better get it together pretty darn quick.
I agree, man. You know, time is of the essence.
Hey, go green.
There you go. Thanks so much, JC. Fantastic call. Appreciate your time, man. All right, again, folks, if you want to call in just like my man JC did, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And I get it, folks, I get it. Michigan State, they're undefeated. You should be happy because they're winning at the end of the day. But it's just hard to ignore. It's just hard to ignore that this team has yet to inflict, again, to use the word JC used, to inflict some dominance on an opponent that they should have dominated. That's all I'm saying. I get it. I get it. Trust me. Being undefeated, that's great. It's great. Throw a party. It's 5-0, folks. But it's still a lot of football left to play. And Michigan State has really yet to be pushed other than, I would say, by a formidable team nationally other than Oregon. So let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. It's still early. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll give you a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Jim Probstel, MSU, former MSU football player for the 1965 National Championship team. You are locked into Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm Al Martin. You know what? Before we get to our snippet from tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Jim Probstel, this story also was one that caught my eye. Again, the Louisville was more of a serious tone. This one, I got a chuckle out of this one. I don't know. I laughed when I heard about this story, folks, because everyone on social media had some, you know, jokes here and there about it. There were a lot of memes on Instagram about it as well. But New York Knicks coach Derek Fisher and Memphis Grizzly forward Matt Barnes, they were actually involved in a physical altercation Saturday night in L.A. During a party at the home of Barnes' ex-wife. Now, I believe her name is Gloria. You guys know I am a, which I hate to admit here in front of, you know, my engineer Isaac Constance, but he knows it. Big, you know, reality TV guy, okay? And I used to watch. I don't watch this one anymore. It's gotten corny. Basketball Wives, all right? And Matt Barnes' wife, or now ex-wife, Gloria, used to be on there. She's so cool. She used to be one of my favorite characters on the show. But anyway, they broke up. But anyway, Barnes still feels some type of way about Gloria because, again, Gloria threw a party at the, you know, at her house. Barnes heard about it. Barnes decided to drive from Memphis Grizzlies training camp, which is what I believe, you know, in Santa Barbara to L.A., which is, I think, is a pretty lofty drive. You know anything about that? I think that's
That's Santa Barbara, I believe. I could be mistaken, but I think it's closer to San Fran, in which case that would be 4 or 5 hours at least,
that,
I think.
That took some moxie. I mean, to say, all right, I'm about to make this drive from Santa Barbara to California because I'm feeling some type of way about this. He went to that party with some intent. But anyway, so Barnes makes the drive. He's like, okay, he's practicing. I don't know if his teammates may have told him. I don't know how he got the news. But he's like, hey, you know, Derek Fisher, your former teammate, man, he's at the house of your ex-wife, Gloria. You know what you going to do about it? So Barnes hops in his car. He drives from Santa Barbara to L.A. And when Barnes arrived at the home, he got physical with Derek Fisher. Again, Fisher didn't show any outward physical injuries when he returned to practice on Tuesday. Of course, Barnes and Fisher, they played together with the Los Angeles Lakers from 2010 to 2012 and were said by one former teammate to be very close at one time. But, man, I got to be honest, Isaac, I don't know how it would feel about, you know, especially, you know, it's said by a former teammate that they were very, very close. They were once teammates. You know, they had to have some sort of, you know, cool relationship. And then you're trying to make moves, quote unquote, maybe with my ex-wife here. I can feel where Barnes is going from. I don't agree that he should have got physical and went crazy like that, you know, but at the same time, come on, Derek, You're better than that. There's more fishes in the sea. Come on, man.
Yeah. Well, more fishes, fisher.
I didn't even think about that one.
Really? Okay. Well, that's actually a pretty good one. But yeah. Anyway, I agree with you. Matt Barnes, I'm not sure if he should have drove all that way down. Now, maybe if it's a 5-minute drive, I understand it a little bit more.
But Isaac, have you ever had that bad breakup? Yeah. Like the girl you really, really liked, right? Really, really liked her. And you break up with her, and you go through that phase where you're like, you're just trying to get over her. You know, it's like,
don't
pick up the phone. Don't text her. And then if you see her with another cat, it doesn't have to be, you know, like the Derek, this whole story where it doesn't have to be one of your former guys that you knew. But it could be just anybody. When you see him with someone else, I mean, you get that feeling in your tummy. You know, not to say I've been heartbroken before, but at the same time, you know, I've been through a situation like that when I was back in college, man. So I get where Matt is coming from.
Yeah, I flew to Korea. No, I'm just playing. But I do have an ex-girlfriend that's Korean, but even so, I didn't.
Right.
But something similar, yeah. And no, but the problem for me, too, is you're right. That is a definite break, a definite infringement upon the bro code.
Man
from
law.
Derek Fisher.
Man law, so, dude. Yep.
Yeah, I can't really take either side of this. Like I said, during the hour and a half drive or 3-hour drive, I actually looked it up and I'm getting estimates that are that varied. I guess Los Angeles is a big place. But I mean, Matt Barnes, for all that time, what's he thinking to himself? Because if it's a long drive like that, then you think he'd calm down.
Right.
Last thing I want to touch upon this topic, though, is really serious, actually. It's a little bit of an inquisition. How long ago are we talking that Real Wives of the NBA got lame for you? Because I'm guessing it's like 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, no, last season. So like the beginning of the summer.
Okay.
Something like that. So it's been
longer
than some months. I just stopped watching, man. And then they hit you with Drea and all. I'm like, come on, man. This is just getting too crazy. They had like the reunion show now. The only reason I know that's going on is because I watch other reality shows on that channel when they preview it. I'm like, I'm glad I don't watch that anymore, dude. But yeah, man. But interesting situation. Actually, Fisher addressed his team about it. I mean, Carmelo Anthony said that it was important for Fisher to discuss the apparent incident with his players, you know, because, you know, Carmelo talks about how it just caught everybody off guard. So, yeah, crazy story, though. Crazy story. All right. Well, let's give you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit down with a 1965 Michigan State football champion, Jim Provstel, who has written and this guy is just unbelievable, folks. He's written three books he's written, and has gone on to just do some great things within the community. Actually, the Eli Broad College of Business recognized Provstel for his outstanding work. You know, he received his BA and MBA from Michigan State University. And I tell you what, his books, you know, he started with In the Absence of Honor, then wrote Fatal Incident. Both are fiction. And Unintended Impact is the book that we primarily focused on, which is, you know, nonfiction. This is a true story talking about his brother Dick, who struggled unknowingly with the onset of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And I first had to ask Jim, you know, how would he even, you know, after his playing career at Michigan State, how he even, you know, wanted to, you know, started to dive into authorship and writing books. And here's what he had to say.
You seem to evolve in terms of how you write, and pretty soon you're doing some reasonable work. And I think I knew I was a good writer when I was in graduate school here. Mm-hmm. It seemed to come naturally to me.
Gotcha.
Just like talking does to you.
Right.
Writing seemed to come naturally to me.
Some days it's a challenge right now. Yeah, right. Now, Jim, I want to dive into Unintended Impact because it speaks directly to the sporting world, and it speaks directly to a subject that, you know, in many, many respects we've just over-exhausted over the many months here on the show because it's so in your face, and that being concussions in the world of sports and more specifically the world of football. You decided to write a book about your brother Dick. That is very, very riveting stuff. Why did you decide to write this book first?
Well, I felt that the topic was, in amateur sports, was not getting the attention that it was due. We were hearing a lot about concussions and about CTE dementia and about lawsuits in the NFL ranks, but I don't think we were talking in depth about concussions when it came to amateur, you know, grade school, high school, college, mm-hmm. football. And so I wanted to focus. I wanted to bring some focus to it, bring some understanding that, this just isn't an NFL topic.
And, of course, it hit home because your brother went through this, right?
No, that's absolutely right. Dick died from CTE dementia 3 years ago and suffered from the results of his concussions from both high school and college for basically his entire adult life.
Now, when you talk about chronic traumatic encephalopathy and what Dick went through, when did you guys first notice, you and family around Dick, when did you all first notice a change in Dick?
Well, the change came right away with the migraine headaches. And that's when he was taken out of football in 1964. And he went into law school, and he couldn't finish law school because of the continual migraine headaches that he was having. But the actual change in chronic traumatic encephalopathy started to show up, and we didn't know what it was, by the way, at that time at all.
Right.
But we saw, you know, some behavior changes that started to take place right around 38 to 40. And what happens in CTE is the brain slowly shrinks. Mm-hmm. Okay, it doesn't happen all overnight. So with just small shrinkage of the brain, you get small behavior changes. Mm-hmm. And as that shrinkage continues, the behavior change becomes exacerbated.
What behavior changes did you guys experience?
Early on, they were just behavioral disorder changes, the way he started treating people. We saw differences in his how he was able to speak. We saw differences in his value system. And that just started to go downhill as he ran his business. And it got to a point where he literally couldn't make any good decisions. And he became a victim of people taking advantage of him.
When you saw this change, because, again, Jim, you are yourself a former football player, a member of that 1965 Michigan State National Championship football team.
Right.
Did it scare you? Did it make you take a step back and say, okay, if my brother's going through this, is it going to affect me as well? Did it scare you at all?
Probably scared my wife more than it scared me.
Yeah.
But yeah. It does, because it doesn't scare you so much as you start to reflect a little bit on concussions or hard hits or things that you've taken over the years. And everybody who's played is certainly not exempt from that. And you start to wonder, why am I not remembering somebody's name, or why can't I remember an address, or why can't I remember things that are commonly remembered, when in reality, for the most part, that's just part of the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't so much scare me, but it certainly got my attention for sure.
Jim, can you sort of take us back into the sporting culture of when you played back in the 60s? Because now, when you get hit hard, I mean, every precaution in the book is taken. I mean, you're taken off the field.
Right.
They take you through a lot of tests. And if you resemble any concussion-like symptoms, you're done. You're not playing. That's it. But when you played, do you remember any moment that you experienced even personally where you had a big hit or a big hit happened to you?
You always remember those moments. Yeah.
They don't leave you.
No, they don't. But it's almost like a pre-Mike Webster era and a post-Mike Webster era. Webster was the first diagnosed CTE person from the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2002.
Yep.
So going back to the dark ages when we played in the 50s and the 60s, I grew up, or Dick and I and our family grew up in Canton, Ohio. Now, Canton, Ohio is a fairly well, Canton and Massillon are a fairly well regarded community for high school football. And some of the best mm-hmm. coaches in the country have come
right.
from Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, definitely.
And we played, and John McVay was our coach. John ended up with 5 Super Bowl rings with the 49ers.
Right.
And it was a Michigan State coach. And it was a game that was intense, and it was intended to be probably harder or maybe more vicious than it is today,
mm-hmm.
In the sense that you really went after things real quick.
Right.
And if you got a concussion, I asked people, friends of mine, I asked, well, I don't think I had a concussion. I said, well, did the coach ever give you smelling salts? Oh, yeah, they gave me smelling salts. Well, you had a concussion. That's why they give you smelling salts.
Right.
And that's half the problem, is at that time, nobody really understood what these concussions were about. And naturally, if you don't understand what they're about, there's no really pre or post management treatment other than just rest out for a few plays, tell me when you're ready to go back in. Which, so it's a little bit crazy at that time.
Now, going back to your brother, Dick, I was doing some research and actually on your website, and you tell a pretty touching story about the closeness that you had with your brother. And more so when it, you know, to get more specific about it, the time when he got inducted into the High School Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, you accepted the award, said some words, and then something happened. Can you talk about that moment? Because you call it one of your favorite moments with your brother.
Well, there's no question about it. I had felt that Dick was overlooked in the High School Hall of Fame. Part of the reason was because of the dementia, because his personality, his behavior with the community, and his reputation, it kind of went downhill a bit.
Yeah.
And I think he was overlooked a little bit as a result of that. But Dick was one of the best athletes I ever played with. And he deserved to be in there. So we called on all of our friends, Michigan State friends that we had, and friends from Ohio to start doing a letter campaign that we hoped would influence the selection committee. Mm. It's a very exclusive high school Hall of Fame.
Right.
And when I did the interview, when I did the presentation for Dick, he just wasn't able to do it himself. And I was happy to do it, of course. But that wasn't enough for Dick. And Dick motioned, and I knew he wanted the mic. And I handed him, he wasn't audible. He could not speak at all at that point in time. And he grabbed the mic, and he held an audience of about 200 people for about 5 minutes, trying to talk in a wheelchair. I can absolutely guarantee you, as people told me afterwards, he said there wasn't a dry eye in the house. When I talked to George Sames, George Sames, of course, was from Canton, Ohio, and one of the great MSU fullbacks, captain and fullback, All-American for MSU, and George was at the induction. And I mentioned to George as we were walking out, I said, what we heard today was the heart of a champion. And it was extremely emotional on everybody's part. But I was very happy for Dick.
What a story and what a moment.
Yeah, it was a good moment, yeah.
With that being said, I mean, I can tell you were very close with your brother.
He and I were very close, yes.
And writing this piece of work, I'm sure, was such a challenge because I'm sure so many emotions just bled out when you were trying to piece together the story and trying to figure out how to convey that. Just how tough was it to write this?
Well, it was very difficult. First of all, I'd never written a nonfiction book in my life. As my friends say, I know why this is hard, because you have to tell the truth. You know, in other books, you don't have to. And the most difficult thing in writing this book was that I wanted to give a deeper description of what living with CTE dementia is really like. Dick's behavior changed. He became somebody that he wasn't. He started behaving in a way that was embarrassing or whatever. And I didn't want to throw my brother under the bus, but I felt like I had to tell the honest story. So I had to walk that line, which was difficult.
Can you give us a preview? I mean, what sort of expert in that book was a bit tough when you were sitting down and saying, okay, I need to include this?
The most difficult thing for me was seeing what happened to him in business. He was a successful businessman, and he got to the point where he was not able to make any decisions, but because he made a lot of money, he still had a fairly good bank account or checkbook.
Right.
And he was, when I got into his business affairs, he was being taken advantage of like I have never seen. Contracts that were bordered on illegal, and people in his second wife taking advantage of him on buying things and stashing away things of value, knowing that the relationship was going to part. Mm-hmm. And that just broke my heart. And then once I got involved in it, then I said, this is enough is enough. I need to get involved. And we took over his affairs and helped him as much as he could to have some level of quality in his life.
Wow, what a tough story. Jim, when people have read your work, and I'm pretty sure you've gotten emails or Twitter, and you're on Twitter. How about that? I didn't even know you were telling me before the show that you're on Twitter. You like Twitter at all?
Not really.
Not really? Who does, right?
I know. But, I have to do it.
Right. Now, when we were talking, I mean, I couldn't help but think about, you know, the type of feedback that you've gotten from individuals that have read this. What is that feedback entailed? What have they told you?
Well, I'll give you the two ends of the bell curve on this one. I'll take the high road first. You've got a lot of people who understand the sport and understand that if it wasn't for the coaching, the play, the discipline, the level of responsibility and character that's developed in contact sports, that this kind of a sport has tremendous value to raising young men. And I don't know how well you were, but I was not the perfect young man at 17 or 19 or 20 years old.
Who was? Right?
I know. So so things happen. And good coaches in sports like this are just perfectly made for young men. And that's the positive side. The other side is that we've learned about this CTE dimension, concussions, and that's not a good thing. But you have people, and some of the feedback I get from people, that have no knowledge about the sport itself, really, say, get rid of football. And, of course, that just makes no sense at all. What we need to do, my personal impression, is we need to, as President Simon says in the endorsement for the book,
right,
we need to focus on player safety and continue to make football the sport that it is. Football is a part of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
This is a part of who we are and how we think and how we talk about it when we go to work. So it's not going to go away. Number one, there's too much money. But number two, player safety is huge, and people are paying attention.
So even with that being said, I mean, and seeing your brother go through what he went through, I mean, you still stick up for the sport because are other values that go overlooked.
If you try to go through life not getting hurt, yeah. I mean, that's a formula for doing nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to get hurt spiritually, financially, emotionally, relationship-wise. I mean, there's a million ways that we get hurt in life, and learning how to handle that is important. Now, I'm not saying that we should ignore the facts of concussions and CTE dementia, but we need to understand that getting hurt is just a part of our life, and that's the way we grow.
Do you think the majority perception when it comes to CTE and even, you know, little our youth playing the game of football, do you think it's majority negative or still positive?
Well, I think the majority is positive, but I think it's in two camps because you do have the younger players now, the players that are 8, 9, 10, and so forth.
Right.
And there is the issue around the development of the young person's mind, that the fastest growth of their mind takes place between 10 and 12. So any major disruption to the brain at that age can have longer-term adverse effects.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's a concern.
Exactly.
And that this is going to mean we just need to change the way we play the game at that age. And
right.
There are smart people involved in this sport. They'll figure it out.
They will figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I tell you what, I want you to help for those who are trying to figure out how they can get their hands on this book, Jim.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Locally, you can get it at either one of the Schuller stores, or you can get it at the campus bookstore, or you can get it at SBS over on Grand River as well, too. If that doesn't work for you, you can always get it on Amazon or any of the online retailers. That'll always work.
Mm-hmm.
And or you can go into any bookstore throughout the United States and go to their customer service counter, and they can order the book for you.
And it's also on your website, too, which is pretty easy to find.
It is, jimprobstol.com.
Boom.
And that's where you can get a signed copy of the book.
No
extra charge.
I got to head to jimprobstol.com and get me a signed copy. Definitely want to do that.
Right.
Jim, can you let us know what else you're working on, or is that like top secret 007 locked in the safe?
I've learned that you can't talk about that stuff too far in advance, and right now this is my focus, so I'm going to stay with that one. But there definitely are things. Once you start this crazy process of writing books, these things tend to just fill your brain with ideas, and whether they turn into books or not, who knows?
Will you write another sports-related book?
I might, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There's no point.
Of an exclusive here on the show.
There's no closed doors when it comes to writing books.
Again, much thanks to Jim Probstel, member of the 1965 Michigan State National Championship football team, who is now a critically acclaimed author. How about that? Again, you can catch that sit down as I talk with Jim. We went into the 12th man, of course, after the interview, and also you'll see highlights from the Michigan State and Purdue game. We recapped that Lions and Seahawks game on Monday Night Football and so much more. Again, that's tonight at 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. I only have one Throwback Thursday for you on this October 8th. The UFL, United Football League, began its first season with four teams back in 2009. All right, folks, well, that wraps up our show. I want to give a special thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to today's edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.